Chapter 16. A Ransom in Poultry.
"It seems to be all there," Tyndall admitted, as he surveyed the wagon train. "Chickens, sheep, goats, ale, and all. And the grain seems like decent quality."
"Of course it is," snarled Sir Ganelon from horseback. "My father is an honourable man. He would not demean the price of his son's ransom by trying to cheat you of my worth."
He had thrown the cowl of his cloak back, displaying his spell-striped face almost defiantly.
"Even a penny's worth. Oh," he added as an afterthought, digging into his saddlebag and withdrawing a roll of parchment. "This is a letter of credit to Ferron the silversmith, in Sendaria on Bontal, instructing him to pay on demand any tailor's bill presented to him in your name. Enjoy your new finery," he said bitterly, tossing the roll to Tyndall. My apprentice caught it with a wide smile. "By Ishi's comely eye, this is welcome.
Bah, if I have to wear these war-spun clothes even one more month—"
"Now, mage lord," Sir Ganelon said, addressing me formally but warily, "have the terms and conditions of the ransom been met?"
"They have, Sir Ganelon," I agreed, "and it's a credit to your sire's honour. I'm glad we could settle things for this pittance among gentlemen, instead of resorting to base coin, and I do hope this will end any ill will between our domains. By Brigger, I was being sincere, I swear it, but Sir Ganelon's ears were poisoned against me.
As for that, we can speak of it when my face is freed from your spellmongery," he nearly shouted.
"Oh, that. Yes, of course. Tyndall, you put it there. It seems only proper."
"Of course, mage lord," he said, bowing obsequiously.
He motioned for the belligerent knight to dismount. He was unarmoured, but still bore his ransomed blade. His hand brushed it for the barest second, and I could see the notion cross his face. But he came to his feet and stood calmly before Tyndall.
"All right," the boy mage said, clapping his hands together. "Hold still. This might hurt. If you get the urge to gouge out your own eyes, go right ahead."
"Tyndall."
"Oh, all right," he said, annoyed but amused. He waved two fingers. The red snowflake began to fade. "I'm done," he said, when Sir Ganelon looked at him expectantly.
The knight hurriedly removed a lady's looking-glass from his pouch and surveyed his face, touching the fading lines. He began to smile, but it was not a happy smile. "The effect will take a few days to fade completely, and it's possible that it will recur for a few months in times of stress. But by year's end it should be gone. If you have further problems with it, come see me, and regardless of our state, I will address the issue in good faith. You have discharged your commission honourably."
"I will indeed hold you accountable. As for the state of our domains, my father, Sire Gimbal, the war bird of West Flaria, has determined that our realms are not on terms of friendship, as you have used legal technicality to usurp what was, by right of conquest of arms, his own Restall Vale."
"Yes, well, remember, we conquested it right back," reminded Tyndall, who was not enjoying Sir Ganelon's tone one bit.
"Through treachery,"
he nearly squeaked. His voice had not quite settled.
"Through guile," corrected my apprentice indignantly, "and then Master Menelon won the duel you insisted on for possession. So it's ours by law, by right of conquest, and by right of honourable combat."
He counted on his fingers, and then displayed the three to the West Flarian knight.
"Yet we still bear a grudge for the way in which you took it,"
Ganelon shouted.
"Grudge all you like, it's still ours," Tyndall said defiantly.
"So it is," he continued coolly, "yet the grudge of a neighbour can be like Jezdeel's third hell. My father mislikes having a mage lord for a neighbour. That is an abomination against which our ancestors fought the Majocracy, and it should not be borne by their noble descendants. Whatever sham knighthood the Duke insisted on giving you, Lord Gimbal will not treat with the son of a baker as a peer."
"At least his father married his mother,"
Tyndall pointed out. Ganelon blushed, and the snowflake on his face came back across his face briefly. Even being an acknowledged bastard was still a step down from being a legitimate son, entitled to inherit the estates and titles of his father in their entirety.
"I'll not take offence from a stable boy, former stable boy."
Tyndall shrugged.
It's honest work. I didn't feel like a thief until I was ennobled. Sir Ganyalan ignored the jibe. From this day forward, all traffic on the road to Sevendor Vale shall pay triple the toll.
You can't do that,
Tyndall swore, reaching for Slasher. I put out a hand to stop him, but he stopped himself first, and took his fingers away from the hilt as Sir Ganyalan reached for his own.
Truce,
I reminded them both. Your father maintains the roads in the name of the Duke. Those tolls are set by the duchy, and can only be raised by the Duke.
So it would be,
the lad said, his eyes narrowing with satisfaction, if the road went through Sevendor to another domain, or part of the realm, but it does not. Therefore, from Lisnes south, the road is by law a local road, controlled by the Baron, not the Duke, and the Lord of Westphalia says the toll just tripled. I sighed. Very well, Sir Ganyalan. I had hoped we could put this silly feud to bed, but if you insist to try the patience of a mage lord when you have been oft warned, then I cannot pour wisdom into your head. Go, then. If you bear a grudge, then know that the expression of that grudge will be paid in kind by Sevendor. I'll say no more than that. I am not given to threats, and idle threats, least of all. Smiling triumphantly, he returned to the saddle and gave an obnoxious, mocking bow before he rode off to speak to the lead guard on the wagon train. Just as he was about to ride off back to Westphalia on his own, Tyndall cast a cantrip and augmented his voice so that it was easily twice as loud.
Sir Ganyalan, he said with a leer, what do you think of the new device for Brestor Vale? The banner flies from the tower.
Every head in the gate yard turned towards the spire at the top of the gate tower, where a pennant fluttered in the spring breeze. It was a green banner with a black tower on it, as the previous device had been, but where the warbird and spherical egg had been was now an irregular white blob with a single round yellow disc in the middle. A fried egg.
Ishi's tits,
I swore under my breath. About that time, he launched another cantrip, a snap-and-bang aural spell that set every chicken in the wagon clucking in panic at once. Sir Ganyalan gave the most livid stare I've ever seen at my apprentice, who was bent over double with laughter. And he wasn't the only one. More than half of the dozens of men on both sides of the frontier were howling. Without another word or even a backwards glance, Sir Ganyalan galloped down the road. Mage Lord, another one of the Westphalians, an older man, his hair touched with grey at the temples, with a sword at his hip and a knight's chain on the breast of his doublet. I beg a word. I am Sir Fetterlan of Hosley, father of your hostage, Sir Festerlan. Is there any way you would consider treating with me in private? I nodded, while staring angrily at Tyndall. I opened a telepathic link as forcefully as I could, and after a moment's hesitation he answered, We will speak of this later. It was all I said. I ended the conversation without waiting for a response. By all means, Sir Fetterlan, why don't we repair to the gate tower and discuss the matter over cups? I feel the need to be away from all of the livestock at the moment. The man looked genuinely grateful at the cordiality of the reception, especially after our treatment of young Sir Ganyalan. I've gotten to know your boy over the last few weeks. Good lad. A good heart and a keen mind. It's kind of you to say so, Fetterlan said hesitantly, as I led him to the gate tower. His eyes got wider as he stared around in confusion. Pardon me, my lord, but I was here but a year ago, and none of this. This is a mage land now, I pointed out, gesturing toward the blue mage light suspended from the top of the tower. Things move at a different pace in Sevendor. I had refugees from the Wilderlands to settle, and they are an industrious people.
So they are,
he nodded, as he saw the progress the Bovali were making with the new village at Brestor Farms. I've heard rumours of war in Alshar. All true, and far worse than you can imagine, I assured him grimly, as we entered the cosy guard room of the tower. The Bovali here were at the centre of it, but Sevendor is safe, at least for a while, if I have anything to say of it. I poured wine in two cups taken from the common service and shooed a militiaman up to the heights while we conversed. I wish to beg for my son's life, Sir Fetterlan said quietly. I understand that he was involved in some foolishness. Let me assure you, he was coerced by those fortune placed above him.
a position every man finds himself in at one point or another. He was against the idea from the beginning, and it was only attention to his honour that compelled him. "It is good to know I did not raise a fool then," sighed Fetterlan. "Yet when I heard that you were willing to allow Sir Ganyalan and the squires to return with but a token ransom, but not my son, it's a sophisticated matter," I said smoothly, as smoothly as I could, considering this man feared the power I held over his son, and a political one. And when you are dealing with either politics or magi, subtlety and deception are the rule, more often than the exception. "I confess you confound me," Fetterlan said, shaking his head. "I am but a simple country knight, Lord Minelan." "Mage Lord Minelan," I corrected, "and I say it not as a point of pride or vain glory, but to call attention to the fact that normal feudal rules do not necessarily apply when dealing with mage lords, especially at this moment. As I said, I've gotten to know your lad in the last few weeks, and I can see the influence his father had on him. Therefore, I feel I know you, in part, already. Tell me, Sire Fetterlan, how are your relations with your liege?" He looked at me, surprised. "You ask me to betray." "I speak not of betrayal," I said quickly. "I'm merely curious. The Warbird of Westphalia." "Sire Gimble," he sighed heavily, "I took my lands 2 years before his father died, and he and his brother parted the barony east and west. Gimble's father was a stout knight and a decent lord, but his sons, they were trouble, and Gimble in particular was ambitious. My domain ended up in Westphalia, and I faithfully executed my duties to the man, including participating in that nasty business at the crossroads, although I was spared the sack of Brestall. So you are not an admirer of his military ambitions. A lord who looks to war is not looking at his estates," Sire Fetterlan said boldly. "I am no coward, but nor do I seek to thrive at the expense of my neighbours. And your personal opinion of Sire Gimble, aside from your feudal obligations?" The older knight looked at me, understanding the risk he was taking. "He's a pimple on the ass of chivalry," he sighed heavily. "The kind of mean, petty little man who seeks glory at the expense of..." "Say no more," I chuckled. "You needn't compound any guilt over stating the truth about your sworn liege. Still, I felt I had to be certain of your character, even though I guessed well from speaking with your son. I thought as much. Fess has told me about the taxes and regulations and demands he's made on your domain, and I didn't think you would be happy about that, or serving the kind of man who would make them. Yet, despite my personal feelings, if you ask me to betray my sworn lord, I would hesitate before putting a man of honour in such a position. It's not my style. But first, let me assure you that Sir Festeran is in no danger from me or my men. Indeed, he is quite at liberty within Sevendor, and he has lived up to the letter of his parole." "That's very gracious of you," Fetterlan said, looking instantly relieved. "He is my only son. I just had my first child, a boy, myself. I understand what you mean. Yet the price of ransom is so high. Nor do I mean to beggar your realm," I chuckled. "Indeed, I don't want you to pay the ransom." "What?" he asked, alarmed. "Your son appears to have talent, Sire Fetterlan," I explained. "Magical talent, enough to consider training him. And due to some unforeseen but fortunate events recently, Sevendor is allowing his talent to manifest more completely. But if he is to become a mage, then," he said, struggling with the all-too-common reaction of the petty nobility when they discover their heir has talent. "No noble title, no holding land, no inheritance, doomed to a life of quiet service as court magi or spellmongers. A fate worse than death for a country knight. Last year, perhaps he might have been in danger from the censorate. This year, the issue is in question. And next year, he should be able to both receive training to develop his talent and still inherit his patrimony. But until then, the news of his talent should be kept quiet, for his own safety." "Ah, of course," Fetterlan agreed, as a number of confusing thoughts collided in the vicinity of his bushy eyebrows. "I see your stratagem now, Mage Lord. If my son is a hostage, then he is under your care until ransom is paid, where I can teach him clandestinely. Not that it will be much of a secret here, but as long as he is a prisoner, he will not be subject to any more of Gimbal and Ganyalan's idiocy. He's just the kind of young, brave knight who gets sent off on stupid suicide missions, and by that I mean no disrespect to him, but Gimbal strikes me as the kind of man who delights in that kind of vainglorious foolishness. And my son would be honour-bound to do as he was bid, only as a prisoner, exactly. He cannot honourably serve until his ransom is paid. Would you like to see him?
By the All-Father? Yes,
the man said gratefully. His mother is worried sick that he's in irons in some dungeon hole. She won't be content until I've told her I've laid eyes on him. I'll do better than that. It is a long journey back to your home. Please, be our guest, have dinner with us, and enjoy your son's company. You may return on the morrow after witnessing the ease of his captivity yourself. That eased the knight's mind tremendously. I escorted Sir Fetterlan all the way back to the castle, noting with satisfaction the astonished look on his face. He was the first real outsider familiar with the Vale to come to Seven Doors since we'd begun our work. I was pleased to see we had impressed him. "How many people do you say you have now?" he asked in wonderment, as we passed no less than 4 wagons and 2 full work levies just outside of Gurusham. "I brought nearly 2,000, with near another 1,000 and more on the way," I explained, as we walked the horses at a leisurely pace. I told the briefest of tales to explain how they had come here. I don't believe that their origin impressed Sir Fetterlan as much as their numbers. "You realize I've seen more men of fighting age in the last half hour than I have in Westphalia in a 2-day ride?" he snorted in disbelief. "Between Faris and this latest levy, it's amazing there's a peasant lad of age anywhere in the Vales. These men have done their service in defense of the duchies," I said diplomatically. "They need a safe place to rest and recover. Seven Door is their new home. My point, Mage Lord, was that should the war bird decide to raid your busy little land, he may well find far more resistance than he suspects." "I dare say he would," I smiled. "Do you think it likely?" "I am not deep in my liege's counsels," admitted Sir Fetterlan. "He mistrusts my loyalty to honour over my loyalty to him, and the gods have spared me that, at least. But if I know the man's temperament, he will not let a threat like Seven Door stay on his frontier without challenge. He has been preparing to harass his neighbour, Baron Arathaniel, for 2 years now, before he was distracted by Seven Door. I was hoping that the new gate fortifications would prove discouraging," I admitted. "They are formidable, and they have the entire Bontol Valley abuzz. So quickly and solidly did you raise them. In truth, they are advanced beyond the point of all rumours. But some assure Sire Gimbal that they are but illusions of magic, and will fade with the first blow struck. He's welcome to lead a cavalry charge against those dykes if he wishes," I chuckled, imagining such a debacle. "Though they were raised by magic, they're as solid as—"
"Great Ishe, who birthed us all," swore Sir Fetterlan, his eyes wide with shock, as the afternoon sun hit the white stones of Seven Door Castle just right in the distance. It shone like a beacon.
"What happened to your castle?"
"There was a slight mishap," I said quietly. "It's perfectly safe. Merely a colour change. But it affected every bit of stone for 2 miles. One gets used to that sort of thing," I said casually, despite the fact that I still wasn't used to it. I let the matter go at that. No need to start spreading even more rumours, some with the truth about the stone. I had enough problems. We continued to chat about small matters like gentlemen as we passed through Seven Door Village and up to the castle. If the change in the latter had provoked him, the change in the former impressed him mightily.
"Why, you have the beginnings of a small town here," he remarked, shaking his head. "Last summer there couldn't have been more than 100 people here, and now you have 10 times that."
"And they eat a lot, too," I groaned good-naturedly. "But come autumn this year, we should be able to feed ourselves at least."
"Is that a tavern?"
he asked, gesturing excitedly over toward the growing ale stall on the commons. We went directly to the practice yard, after the stable boy who took our mounts. "When did we get a stable boy?" directed us to Sir Festeran's location. There, a 6 guards were wearing padded armour and using blunted swords to spar with each other, or against the half-rotten Pell. Among them were Sir Festeran and a couple of Bovali lads who fancied themselves warriors and wanted to practice. I'd encouraged that, offering prizes for the best of them. I'd also mandated weekly archery practice at the butts on the common for all lads between 12 and 16. I wanted my folk to be able to defend my realm. The aggressive way the boys were going at it, I didn't think that would be a problem. Festeran at least was giving a good account of himself. Now that he was not fighting for honour or his life, he had reasonably good form and was able to land several sound blows on the peasant boys' helmets before he realized he was being watched. He waved to me, and as I was returning the gesture, he recognized the man next to me.
"Father!"
he bellowed, tearing off his helmet and running to embrace his sire. Sir Fetelan looked profoundly grateful, and if there was a tear and a prayer involved, I wouldn't be the one to notice. When the older knight had assured himself that his boy was in one piece and in good health, he relaxed visibly. "I'll leave you two. Listen out for the supper bell, and I'll join you in the great hall. I trust that I have your parole, Sir Festeran."
"You'd have to tear me away, Mage Lord,"
he agreed enthusiastically.
"Father, come meet my new friends."
I watched with satisfaction as the relieved father went off with his son. I wasn't worried about him trying to run off. I was pretty sure we had an understanding on that count, and if they did, they'd miss dinner. And it was boar tonight, thanks to Kyre of Westwood, who had sent three of them to the castle the day before. Nannerly knew her way around a pig. I was about to head back into the great hall and up to my apartments to play with the baby when I could feel the call of another's mind. It wasn't who I expected. It was Mavone.
"Men, we've got problems," he said tersely.
"What kind of problems?" I asked, stopping in my tracks.
"The censorate kind. Hartarian was in a meeting with the representatives of all the ducal censors until late last night. This morning, his two biggest opponents turned up dead."
"Oh, shit," I said eloquently.
"How? One had a heart attack. One fell out of a window."
I considered. "That seems awfully convenient," I pointed out.
"That's what the rest of his opponents thought. The Hang the High Magi Now party is real quiet right now, but they aren't happy. Hartarian's local people are loyal to him, and a troop of heavy infantry mercenaries just conveniently camped out across the way from the citadel. So I doubt there will be an attempt to overthrow him, but the Merwini and Vorian delegations are livid, and they're collecting support from the Castali, Ramiran, and Alshari censors who don't agree with Hartarian."
"How many?" I asked, my heart sinking.
"Probably 3/5, and a lot of the younger censors. Many of the older, more experienced seniors are open to listening to Hartarian, or they were, before the deaths."
"Was it murder?"
"What do you think? The one with the heart attack was old and grey and fat as a baker."
"Hey."
"Sorry. Anyway, the other one was praying in a locked room by himself, and then just fell over the balcony."
"So there were plausible explanations for both deaths," I reasoned. "They may not be murder.
Of course, Hartarian's niece showed up 4 days ago with a few comely servant girls,"
Mavone said casually.
"Lady Isili?"
"Then it was murder."
"Assassination," he corrected. "Her fingers were all over it. I think she and her sewing circle and those mercenaries are Duke Rad's tangible show of support for Hartarian. But from the way he reacted this morning, Hartarian wasn't happy with the result at all. Now there are war magi from both sides skulking about the place, waiting for someone to make the first move."
"Did Hartarian bring you before the council?" I asked, curious.
"No, they wouldn't allow it," he chuckled. "But I met with 7 of them privately. I told them about the dead god, and did my best to scare them shitless. I think it worked on 3 of them. The other 4 were either skeptical or fanatics, or both. Of course, 2 of them are dead now," he reminded himself.
"Did Hartarian—"
"No. He had no idea they were going to die, I'm sure of it. And he suspects Isili as much as I do. But that doesn't matter. He's expelled all those who refuse to follow him from the citadel, and he's handed the keys over to me in trust to you."
"How did they react to his new witchstone?"
"The general did not enlighten his subordinates about it," Mavone said diplomatically. "I think he wanted to avoid the appearance of being bribed. Which is exactly what we did, I interrupted, and thought that it would be needlessly provocative to flaunt such a powerful bauble. Of course, after my tour of the vaults, a witchstone is almost redundant. Min, this place is loaded to the rafters with all sorts of confiscated stuff, stuff we can use. And the library, I found works I had thought were long lost. The early censorate confiscated entire estates, and had a lot of the library shipped here for academic study. Do what you can to take inventory, I advised. I want to know just what we're going to be responsible for. You don't think you'll have any problem holding the place once Harterion leaves for Castal? Nope, the censorate's castellan and I have become fast friends, and the captain of the guard understands the change in regime better than anyone, I think. But I'd like to rig the dice. How so? How many spare witch stones do we have? Maybe 5? Why? Because there's a war mage I'd like to recruit to help out here. He was a baronial censor in Rhaemir before Faerys when he joined up. But he's an outstanding war mage. Garendran. I had heard of him. He was a combat mage, but not the usual hack-and-slash commando. Garendran specialized in small unit tactics and command magic. If you're wondering what that is, so do I. I've never gotten a satisfactory explanation for it. You think he'll be helpful? Oh, yes. If he's on our side. But he knows the censorate already, so there won't be any crap about an outsider overseeing security. And he's really good at building the kind of unit we're going to need here. What kind of unit? I asked, hesitantly. Well, we're going to need someone to replace the censorate, in terms of civil enforcement of the low magi, right? And policing the high magi, not to mention defending order assets like this magnificent citadel. We need a school for war magi, knights, magi, whatever you want to call them, and this place is it. Once we clear out some of the garbage and rearrange the living quarters, I think this would be an excellent war college for that sort of thing. I'll consider it, I agreed. Right now I just want to make certain it's secure. But we're supposed to be meeting in just a few weeks at the Robin Wing Conclave. If you can convince Garendran to come to the council, then I'll evaluate him. It's probably just a formality. He has a reputation, and I've never heard anything bad about him. He's a professional, Mavone assured me, and he's just the kind of iron-balled bastard we need to crack the whip for us. I'm really too delicate for such base pursuits. If you need him, I'll consider it, I repeated. Anything else? He paused. Not the, oh, let me see, was there something else kind of pause, but the, I don't know if I should really tell you this, and if I do, how can I put it most diplomatically, kind of pause. My heart was sinking with dread before he ever spoke. There was one thing, Min, he said casually. There was the reception the other night, the day Isali arrived. She looked a little well-fed, and she's usually so slender. So I had a hunch, and I checked, and, Min, she's at least 2-3 months pregnant, and by my calculations that puts the date of her conception right around the time of the Battle of Timberwatch. I paused. My world was shaking itself around me, and I was struggling to bring it back into focus. An army of emotions encamped in my heart, and blind rage was leading them. Tell no one, I ordered him, not even Pentandra, not yet, and find some way to confirm it's mine. It very well might not be. The lady's virtue is at the service of her master, and there's every chance that I wasn't the only wand in the wench. But don't mention this to anyone, Mavone. I'm serious. This complicates things at a level I hadn't even considered. Until I do, keep it a secret.